Penguin Random House Audio presents Happily Never After by Lynn Painter. Read for you by Helen Laser and Sean Patrick Hopkins. For Kevin. I've been in love with you longer than I haven't. That sounded really romantic when I first thought of it, but upon second glance, it's really just a factual comparison of the number of years I've been alive versus the number of years we've been married, so... For Kevin. I can't believe I've never gotten tired of you. You're still my favorite person in the whole wide world, even after all these years. Oof, that one makes us sound old. Maybe... For Kevin. You make me feel the way the New Heart Boat song makes me feel. That one makes sense to us, but strangers listening to this book might think that song makes me angry or amorous or sad, so perhaps. For Kevin. Life with you is better than a rom-com. Chapter 1. Sophie. The moment my dad raised my veil, kissed my cheek, and handed me off to Stuart, I wanted to throw up. No, first I wanted to punch my groom right in his besotted smile. Then I wanted to vomit. Instead, I took his arm and grinned back at him like a good bride. The pastor started speaking, launching into his cookie-cutter TED talk about true love, and my heart was racing as I waited. I swear I could feel 400 sets of eyes burning into the back of my Jacqueline Firkins wedding gown as I heard nothing but the sound of my panicked pulse pounding through my veins and reverberating in my eardrums. Was he already there, seated among the guests? Was he going to burst through the doors, yelling? And God, what if he was a no-show? The photographer, kneeling just to my right, took a photo of my face as I listened to Pastor Pete's love lies, so I turned up my lips and attempted to project bridal joy. "You look so nervous," Stuart whispered, giving me a small smile. I honestly don't know how I didn't throat punch him at that moment.
"Welcome, loved ones," the pastor said, beaming at the congregation as he spoke. "We are gathered here today to join together Sophie and Stuart in holy matrimony."
I felt my breath hitch, unsteady, as he kept yammering, leading us closer to the moment. Something about the twinkling lights and evergreen boughs that we'd painstakingly selected for our December wedding felt garish to me all of a sudden, as if the hobo ghost from Polar Express was going to show up in the back of the church and mock me for my foolishness. And he wouldn't be wrong. Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, I thought, panic tightening my chest. With every word the pastor spoke, my anxiety grew. Stuart squeezed my trembling hand, the ever-supportive fiancé, and I squeezed back hard enough to make him look at me in surprise.
"Should anyone present know of any reason that this couple should not be joined in holy matrimony, speak now or forever hold your..."
"I do."
A collective gasp shot through the large chapel, and when I turned around, the man standing up was not at all what I expected. He was big and tall and impeccably dressed. Charcoal suit, white shirt, gray tie, and matching pocket square. He looked like Henry Cavill's stunt double or something, but with darker hair and more intense eyes. Honestly, I'd imagined he would be a party bro, like Vince Vaughn in Wedding Crashers, but this man looked more like he belonged in a boardroom.
"So sorry to interrupt," he said in a smooth, deep voice, "but these two should absolutely not be married."
"Who is that?" Stuart hissed, daring to give me an accusing stare as a low rumble of whispers emanated from the pews.
"Oh, she doesn't know me, Stuart,"
the man said, looking 100% comfortable in his uncomfortable role. He raised one dark eyebrow and added,
"But my friend Becca knows you."
I gasped, my response entirely authentic, even though I'd actually practiced it beforehand. I'd known this man was coming, but I hadn't expected him to be so good. The man was good. The way he spoke made me feel just as shocked as I'd been two nights ago, when I'd discovered Stuart's Becca on his phone.
"Listen, pal, I don't know..." "Stuart, shut up." The man looked down at his wrist and straightened his cuff, as if the mere sight of Stuart bored him. The lovely Sophie deserves so much more than a cheater for a husband. I would imagine most of us here know it isn't the first time. Wasn't there a Chloe last year? I don't know who you are, but this is bullshit. Stuart's face was red as he glared at the man, and then his darting eyes came back to me. I looked at his face, remembering how it had looked when he'd sobbingly begged my forgiveness over his Chloe transgression, and he actually had the gall to say to me, "You know it's not true, right?" My gut burned as he feigned innocence, and I said, "How would I know that? Isn't Becca the name of the girl who texted you in the middle of the night and you said it was a wrong number?" "It was a wrong number," he said with wild eyes. "This guy is obviously trying to ruin our day, and you're letting him, Soph." "Then give me your phone," I said calmly, and Pastor Pete pulled at his collar. "What?" Stuart's flushed face twisted, and he glanced at the congregation as though looking for backup. "If you have nothing to hide," the objector said, still standing and talking in that deep, steady voice, like this whole scenario was completely normal. "Just give her the phone, Stuart."
"That's it, fucker!"
Stuart yelled, rushing toward the guy. All hell broke loose as his groomsmen followed, though it was unclear if they were trying to hold him back or incite the forthcoming brawl. It was a cacophony of male yelling and gray tuxedos in motion. His mother yelled, "Stuart, no!" just as Stuart punched the objector square in the face. "Oh my God," I said to no one in particular, watching in disbelief as the objector took the punch without his body moving, as if he hadn't even felt it. Stuart's father looked right at me as he loudly muttered, "Jesus Christ." And Pastor Pete apparently forgot that his lapel mic was on because he sighed and said, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
"To dodging the Stuart bullet," Asha said, holding up her shot glass.
"To dodging Stuart," I repeated, tossing back the Cuervo. It burned going down. Man, I hate tequila. But I welcomed its effects. My head was spinning from the wedding collapse, and I desperately wished for impairment of any sort. It had been 4 hours since the ceremony brawl, and an hour since Stuart had removed his things from the honeymoon suite. Yet I still felt like everything had just happened.
"Woo!"
Asha shouted, slamming her glass down on the bar. Yes, she is one shot ahead of me and way more relaxed. The honeymoon suite had a fully stocked bar between the two balcony doors, and we'd been bellied up to it since the moment Stuart had left.
"I still cannot believe how perfectly it went down," she said, giving her head a shake. "I mean, technically, it's exactly what we paid for, but the dude made everyone at the ceremony hate cheating Stuart and totally sympathize with you."
Cheating Stuart. I appreciated her villainizing him. That's what friends did, after all. But I was still devastated by Stu's infidelity. Yes, he'd cheated in the past, so I hadn't been completely blindsided, but I'd wholeheartedly believed that it was a one-time mistake, and I'd chugged the Kool-Aid of happily ever after like a damn fool. Until I saw his phone 2 nights ago. I'm just so relieved the blame for the canceled wedding falls solely on Stuart instead of me and my parents, I said, leaning forward on my stool to grab a Twinkie off the bar. Until Asha found her unorthodox solution, I'd been resigned to marrying Stuart and seeking an annulment after the fact. I knew it was totally bonkers to go through with the wedding, but it was the only way to ensure my father didn't pay the price for my failed relationship. I unwrapped the snack and shook my head, still in awe. "I can't believe the plan actually worked," Asha agreed, reaching around the box of Twinkies to grab more tequila. "Thank God for the objector."
Chapter 2. Max. I knocked on the hotel room door and waited. This was my least favorite part. More often than not, the bride who desperately wanted out of her own wedding was an emotional mess afterward, shocked by the end of what she thought would be the beginning of the rest of their lives together. And I was not the reassuring kind. Backpats and handkerchiefs were not my thing. I just needed my money and to get the hell out of there. On a side note, who the hell doesn't have Venmo or PayPal? I heard a noise just before the door flew open. The objector! A blonde in a Red Hot Chili Peppers t-shirt that went down to her knees grinned at me. I'm Asha. We talked on the phone? Ah, yes. The bride's best friend and my college roommate's cousin. So, you're Tom's cousin? Yes! She grinned again, and I realized she was totally buzzed. Come in! She held open the door, and I followed her inside what was obviously the bridal suite. Huge living room, bedroom to the left that appeared to have rose petals everywhere, and a silver bucket on the coffee table with a bottle of champagne inside. Typical. I shifted my gaze to the right and saw the bar, with an open bottle of tequila in the center and two shot glasses on the surface. Less typical. You were amazing, she squealed, shaking her head like she couldn't believe it, as she went right over to the bar and grabbed the bottle. Tommy told me to trust him, but I had no idea that you'd be such a professional. I smiled and muttered a thanks, but I was never sure how to respond to that. It wasn't like I was proud of my performance. I wasn't an actor looking for good reviews, for fuck's sake. It was just something I occasionally did for money. At that moment, the balcony door flew open, and the bride, Sophie, ran in, saying to Asha, I need one more. At least, it looked like the bride. Walking down the aisle, she'd been stunning. Her dark hair had been tidily piled on top of her head, accentuating her light brown eyes and long, graceful neck. She'd looked like everything I imagined a bride would want to look like on her wedding day. Her hair now, though, was everywhere. Technically, a lot of it was in a messy bun, but long strands of curly hair hung all around her face like she'd just wrestled a bear. She was no longer wearing any makeup, which made her look like a teenager, and she'd switched out the wedding gown for a Chicago Bears jersey and leggings, and snow boots. She stopped in her tracks when she saw me, and then a big smile slid across her face. You are my hero. I opened my mouth to speak, but she cut me off with an index finger. Give me one sec. I have to finish a project. I watched in disbelief as Asha tossed her a hostess Twinkie, and then she disappeared back out onto the balcony. Do I want to know? I asked, my eyes still on the sliding door. Twinkies won't hurt the Volvo's paint, so it's a victimless crime, she said, turning to look at the bottles of liquor on the shelf behind the bar. That's all you need to know. I contemplated just exiting the hotel room at that moment, because A, this was clearly none of my business, and B, it was just past 7 and I was starving. But when I saw the bride pull her arm back and launch that snack cake off the balcony like a professional quarterback, I decided to stick around for another minute. Want a drink? Asha asked, looking ready to pour herself a tequila shooter. Before I could answer, the bride came back inside, saying, as she closed the sliding door behind her, We need to switch to something else. What? Why? Asha asked, pouting. She held up the bottle of tequila and said, Jose is our friend. Nope. The bride shook her head, kicked off the boots, and said, As much as I want to get ripped, I don't want to end up with my head in a hotel toilet. Pretty sure that's how you get dysentery. Pretty sure that isn't right, I said under my breath. Schnapps, maybe? Asha asked. Objector's choice, Sophie said, her lips turning up into a little smile as she tilted her head and looked in my direction. What should we drink? Whiskey, I said, wondering what her usual drink of choice was. Because when she was dressed as a bride, I would have pegged her as a Cosmo drinker, perhaps someone who enjoyed a nice Chardonnay. But this Twinkie-tossing, wild-eyed girl was a bit of a mystery. Unless you're dialing back to something lighter. Not at all, she said, pulling the elastic from her hair and shaking out the half bun. But tequila punches too hard. Have a shot with us, objector, Asha said, or rather squealed. The pizza's already on the way. First of all, you have to stop calling me that. Why? Sophie asked, putting her hands on her hips and screwing her eyebrows together. What's your real name again? Max, I said. Parks. Max, she repeated, raising her eyes to the ceiling as if it held an opinion on my name. I mean, that's a fine name and all, but the objector is next level. It makes me sound like an off-brand superhero. She snorted a little laugh, and I noticed her freckles when she crinkled her nose. Like a lawyer who got stuck in radioactive waste, right? Exactly, I agreed. Which whiskey, objector? Asha asked, gesturing toward the bar. You're drinking with us, right? Thank you, but I can't. Of course he isn't, Sophie said, rolling her eyes and climbing onto one of the two bar stools. He is a man, and it's their job to disappoint us eternally. Please pour me a shot, Ash. Didn't you just call me your hero? I asked, sliding my hands into my pockets as she ignored me and reached for the shot glass. Like 2 minutes ago? Your actions were heroic, and I'm very grateful, she said, circling a perfectly manicured fingernail over the top of the tiny glass and turning her back to me. But I said what I said. Asha, my love, will you pour me my whiskey shooter, please? Something about the all-knowing way she said it and her absolute dismissal of me made me shrug out of my jacket, toss it on the sofa, and grab the stool beside her. Make that two, please. She turned her head toward me, her eyebrows raised. You're staying? I can't ruin the reputations of men everywhere by disappointing you, can I? I asked, reaching for the shot that Asha slid in front of me. What are we drinking to? Her lips slowly slid into a smile as she lifted her glass. To last-minute reprieves. I raised my shot to her. To last-minute reprieves.
Chapter 3 Sophie. Is she good? I asked, looking away from the TV and at the objector who'd tossed a drunk Asha over his shoulder and carried her to bed after she fell asleep on a bar stool and nearly toppled to the floor. Max quietly closed the door to the master bedroom behind him, nodding. Already snoring. I didn't know what to make of the objector in terms of whether or not he was a good person, but I was having a great time with him. He was down to an untucked dress shirt, no tie, and no shoes, and he'd thrown back drinks with us as if he'd always been a part of our friend group. Well, technically, I didn't have a friend group. Asha was basically my only friend, and the rest of the bridal party had been Stuart's people, but still. I glanced back at the movie and rolled my eyes as Cameron Diaz started crying in the back of a car. This is when she loses her mind and thinks it's a good idea to give up everything for a man just because he made liquid form in her tear ducts. Max plopped down on the couch beside me and kicked his feet up on the coffee table. Did Stuart ruin the holiday for you? I turned my head, and he was watching me with amusement in his dark eyes. He really had a nice face, I thought, as I said. God, no. The holiday ruined the holiday for me. Not a fan? I hate rom-coms. For real? He asked with raised eyebrows. They're just so unrealistic, as if written by morons who've been injected with lovesick hopefulness and had delusions of romance shot up their asses. Am I slurring? They're actually part of the problem, if you ask me. He grabbed the can of nuts from the table beside him, set it on his stomach, then tossed a walnut into his mouth. What is the problem of which you speak? Love? I rolled my eyes and grabbed a nut. Love isn't the problem. The problem is the way society promotes it, as if it's the only thing that matters in life when it doesn't even exist. I'd say who hurt you, he said, leaning his head farther back, throwing a peanut high into the air, then catching it in his mouth. But seeing as I was recently bitch-slapped by your ex-fiancé, I actually have the answer. Stuart didn't hurt me. I bit into a walnut and shook my head, still smoldering with rage over everything that happened, the horrible choices I made. He pissed me off and made me want to beat him to death on the altar of our Lord, but he did not hurt me. That made him quirk an eyebrow. Come on, it's okay. Oh, I know, I said, meeting his doubtful gaze and sitting up straighter. But it's true.
I absolutely knew he wouldn't be faithful. I made the mistake of thinking marriage might be a good idea because of logical reasons, but Stu's cheating neither surprised nor hurt me. He stopped chewing.
You expected your fiancé to cheat?
Max, I have been cheated on by every single person I've ever committed to, beginning with that brace-faced trumpeter, Jack Snook, way back in the 8th grade. A pitying look crossed Max's face, and I held up a hand to stop him from speaking. And before you say something nice and placating like, they were idiots, please know that I don't take their idiocy personally. I know they were idiots, and it had nothing to do with me. He raised his eyebrows in a gesture that encouraged me to continue. So I did. Because it's a crock, this notion of the one. One person you're meant to spend your entire life with, happily together, until you're dead. That doesn't even make sense. It's a myth, and the reality is that every single human has the potential to cheat if put in the right circumstances.
Wow. He tilted his head and narrowed his eyes. You really mean that?
I do. I turned a little on the sofa, for some reason compelled to make him understand. I didn't know his backstory, but the fact that he ruined weddings for money led me to believe he might actually get me. I strongly suspect that love is a trick your brain plays on you to encourage procreation, survival of the species and all that. Serotonin and hormones go to work, and it's all just propaganda to make us keep trying for magic that doesn't exist.
You can procreate without love. And what about couples who are happily married for 50 years?
He turned his body as well, so we were face to face on the fancy hotel sofa.
Who have never cheated? How do you explain that?
Luck, character, and hard work. I shrugged and said, my grandparents are like that, happily married for 47 years, but the thing of it is, true love is just a label we stick on highly functioning partnerships to perpetuate the myth.
Continue. He said, half smiling, like he found my theories amusing.
It's kind of like finding a good friend or a good roommate, which was what I was shooting for with Stuart. My grandparents like each other, get along well, and have found a way to comfortably live together and build a life. It's wonderful, but that doesn't mean it's true love.
What's the difference?
He asked, rubbing a hand over his chin and giving me really intense eye contact, like he'd never heard anything as interesting as what I was saying. The difference is that they each could probably reach the same agreement with someone else if they wanted to. They aren't soulmates, they're two compatible people who have found a way to make life together work, which really doesn't mean anything very special at all.
He said, his lips pursed, and I couldn't tell if it was the sound of agreement or dissent.
So I pushed forward, on a mission to prove the point I'd been thinking about constantly since the Stuart debacle. There are 7.8 billion people in the world, I said, shaking my head at the absurdity. How can you ever be sure you've found the one true love of your life when you haven't even met 1% of the people on the earth? You could have the exact same relationship with millions of them as you do with your significant other, simply because of compatibility.
That's fair. He murmured, even though I didn't think he fully agreed with me. So then, do you include your grandparents in your everyone has the potential to cheat scenario?
Absolutely, I said, nodding. I don't want to dwell on it because, ew, but even Don and Mabel would cheat if presented with the right chemistry and opportunity. He narrowed his eyes.
What does hmm mean?
A giggle gurgled out of me, the seriousness of our conversation juxtaposed over serious tipsiness.
You don't agree.
Honestly? He said, his dark eyes narrowed as he looked somewhere past my shoulder, like he was lost in thought.
I have no fucking clue.
Chapter 4 Max. Did I agree? Yes and no. I'm not sure if I agree entirely about love not existing, I said, carefully choosing my words so as not to upset the recently cheated on almost bride. But I do think love is a gamble, and most people walk away from the table with less than they brought. I was a risk versus reward kind of guy, and experience had taught me that the risk definitely wasn't worth the reward. No thank you. Nice analogy, Sophie said, moving so her legs were curled underneath her. So did you lose at the table, and that's why you do this? Is that the objector's origin story? I wasn't going to tell her my life story, because I didn't even know Sophie's last name, for God's sake. But I also didn't like the origin story comment. I wasn't some mercenary who compulsively broke up weddings for money out of some twisted need for retribution. For starters, I don't really do this very often. I helped out a friend in a bad situation, and then through word of mouth, did a few more favors for acquaintances with limited options. Tell me everything, she said, grinning and leaning her head against the back of the sofa. But go get the rest of the pizza first, Maxie. Not my name, I said, standing. But I want to make sure I get another slice before you kill it, so I will obey anyway, just this once. Smart boy, she replied as I walked over to the bar. Now tell me about your first objection. It was a little surreal when I thought back to it, because I hadn't even known the woman very well at the time. Hannah was the administrative assistant at my office. Nice, but pretty quiet, kept to herself. I grabbed the box and carried it over to the sofa, where Sophie was patting the table as if directing pizza traffic. She was getting married to the governor's son, so even though she was an introvert, everyone in the office knew it was going to be kind of a big deal wedding. Ah, she said, throwing open the box the minute I set it down and grabbing a piece of pepperoni. The bald douchebag governor? That's the one, I said, noting the way she crinkled her nose like she knew every little thing about the former governor and hated his guts. But 2 days before the wedding, I left work late, around 8 p.m., and she was sitting in her car in the parking lot crying. Oh, no, Sophie said through a mouthful of food, eyes wide.
What happened?
Despite the seriousness of the story, she looked like such a kid that I sort of wanted to laugh. She got a call from a woman who'd been seeing her fiancé. Apparently, Douche Jr. had neglected to tell the side piece who he actually was or that he was in a relationship. Gross, she said, shaking her head and looking disgusted. The woman called to warn her so she could call off the wedding, total class act, but Hannah said she couldn't. Apparently, Douche Jr. was a master at gaslighting, and anytime she questioned anything in their relationship, he reached out to her parents because her paranoia made him worry she was relapsing. God, just remembering made me want to hit that guy again. I plopped down beside Sophie on the couch. Relapsing? She asked. He was using her mental health against her. Total bullshit. Apparently, she'd really struggled with depression as a teen and shared that with him, which he took as a green light to treat her like she was on the brink of drastic measures any time she disagreed with him. Oh my God, I hate him so much, she said, picking up her bottle of Heineken and raising it to her lips. Right? I grabbed a piece of pizza and took a bite.
So she knew that if she called off the wedding, he would convince everyone she was crazy. In addition to the fact that her parents would be embarrassed and blame her for the loss of thousands of dollars they'd spent on the wedding.
What a nightmare. Sophie took a drink, then lowered the bottle and said, So then we went from what if someone else called off the wedding to let's call his side piece and get all the details to holy shit, this is a plan, let's do it.
You stepped in.
She said it in a near whisper, looking at me with wide eyes.
You hero.
I reached out my foot and knocked her feet off the table. Shut it.
I'm serious, she said, pointing her beer at me. You absolutely are my hero. My dad works for Stuart's dad, and the man is a soulless prick. There is zero question that if I called off the wedding, he would fire my dad in a hot second out of spite. He's just that kind of guy.
I didn't know what to say to that, so I took another bite of pizza. I was actually going to marry Stuart, knowing full well I would be annulling it or divorcing him in the near future because I couldn't let my dad lose 30 years worth of work because of me. There's nothing worse than not having a choice in your future, I said,
meaning it. I couldn't imagine Sophie marrying that guy, an asshole who cheated on her twice. I'm glad I could help. You are out here performing a public service, Objector, she said, finishing her pizza and dusting off her hands. Halting a lifetime of misery, one wedding at a time. Hell yes, I am, I laughed, more buzzed than I'd planned on becoming. Like a firefighter, only without the bravery and dangerous working conditions. The softest of all heroes, she said around a laugh, and I liked her. I mean, I didn't know her, so she could be a total ghoul in real life, but for someone to kill a few buzzed hours with, she was cool. She asked, so, do you have rules? The question caught me off guard, because I absolutely had rules, but hadn't expected her to ask me that. The gist is that I only do it for people with no way out and who are about to marry someone they have proof has wronged them. I wondered what time it was. Cheaters and assholes, basically. Is it lucrative? She asked, scratching at the label on her bottle with a perfectly manicured fingernail. I don't even know how much Asha paid you. Nah, I said. Beer money. That was a lie. I hadn't set out to do any of it, but the side hustle had slowly grown legs on its own. I'd helped Hannah, who then insisted I take money for the help. Good money. A month later, Hannah's sister's best friend reached out for help getting out of her wedding. I tried saying no, but as it turned out, I was a sucker when it came to people who were doomed to wed a dickhead. Knowing I was their only hope messed with me, especially when the phrase, till death do us part, was involved. I found it impossible to say no. As a compromise, I usually only kept enough to cover the expenses, then donated the rest. God, Sophie said, looking young and tipsy as her mouth slid into a smile. What an idea. I bet there are enough unhappy near brides and almost grooms that you can make a full-time career out of objecting if you wanted to. Hell, you'd probably have to turn away business because one person wouldn't be enough to handle the sheer number of people desperately trying to escape their doomed weddings. Maybe that's your calling, I said, trying to imagine her doing it. Somehow I just knew she would kill it. You could be the objectress. I like my job, she said, laying her head back on the sofa and closing her eyes. But that could be a fun side gig, being the objectress to your objector. I don't know if fun is the word I'd use, I replied, letting my eyes close as well. Trust me, objector, she said, her voice a sleepy drawl. We'd have fun.
Chapter 5. 4 months later. Sophie.
I want pineapple. You're just saying that to annoy me. You know my feelings on this.
Guys, it's just pizza. Let's go with cheese and move on. I sighed, ruining the day I ever implemented the Thursday night pizza tradition with my roommates. I'm starving.
I guess cheese is fine, Rose said, muttering under her breath. If you like being hungry an hour later.
Swear to God, those two were going to kill me. I still stood by my decision to take on two roommates, but some days it was like being a parent. When Stuart and I broke up, we had a huge fight over the apartment. It was his when we met, and I naturally moved in with him when we got serious, because it was a stunning apartment. Downtown high-rise with high ceilings and gorgeous views, assigned parking, elevator. I believed in love when it came to that building. So when the wedding didn't happen and I wanted him to move out because, hello, cheater, he actually said to me, "You cannot afford this building on your salary, Soph." He was absolutely correct, but I told him he was wrong and bullied him into leaving, which left me to figure out how to make rent in an apartment that cost more than I made. The answer came in the form of two unlikely roommates, which I didn't want but had to accept. Thankfully, they were easy to live with when they weren't bickering.
For God's sake, Larry said, the pineapple adds like 20 calories. There is no difference in the hunger factor.
I rolled my eyes and walked out onto the deck, enjoying the warmth of the spring evening after months of dreary cold.
I ordered the pizza, half cheese and half pineapple, while watching the people on the street below. In Omaha, the city came alive on the first warm day of spring. It was as if we'd all been locked underground and were finally set free, so we wandered the streets and had drinks outside and clamored to be out anywhere, experiencing life sans parka and boots. My phone buzzed in my hand, and a number I didn't know texted. I have a proposition for you. I knew I should ignore it, but I replied, you have the wrong number. A second later, another text. You sure about that, Sophie? Who the hell? I leaned on the railing and sent, who is this? I wasn't someone who met strangers or had a slew of old friends, so I really had no idea who it could possibly be. When the response came through, I couldn't believe it. It's Max, your objector. Oh, dear Lord. Was it coming back to haunt me already? What in God's name could the man want? I texted, hello? I couldn't think of any reason that guy would be texting me, other than some weird blackmailing scenario or to warn me that someone from my wedding had discovered our arrangement. Damn it. I hadn't seen him since my wedding night, when we got hammered with Asha. He was gone when I woke up from my 1 a.m. nap, and I assumed we'd never speak again. Max texted, meet me for coffee tomorrow morning? Oh, hell no. A tiny knot of tension settled into the back of my neck as my brain scrambled for possible reasons why this stranger would want to meet up. I texted, what is this about? From what I could recall, the man was handsome and seemed very normal, charming even. He hadn't skewed creepy or slimy, although the 1-2 punch of unbridled emotion and multiple whiskey shooters didn't bode well for my good judgment. I just want to run something by you. Stop worrying, I'm not a creep, and this is no big deal. I dropped down into the deck chair, scrambling for an excuse, because there was just no way. Even if he didn't have bad news or an angle he was working, there was nothing I could gain from having coffee with him. As if reading my mind, he texted, stop trying to find an excuse. Just meet me at Starbucks for 5 minutes as early as you want. You can bring Asha if you're worried I'm a danger to you. I groaned and decided to roll with it. Not because I wanted to, but because if I didn't go, I'd drive myself crazy wondering what he'd wanted. Besides, it was always better to know what you were up against, right? I took a deep breath and texted. Starbucks on 114th and Dodge, 7 a.m.
Chapter 6 Max. I didn't recognize her at first. I was sitting at a table by the window waiting for Sophie when the blonde walked in. She was looking at her phone and wearing the standard casual Friday uniform for this corporate part of town. Jeans, good jeans, not garage cleaning jeans, flat, designer, shoes, white t-shirt, and the requisite perfectly tailored black blazer. It screamed, I'm not dressed up today, but still willing to schedule a shit ton of meetings at the drop of a hat. And I knew at a glance that the woman used the shit out of that Apple Watch on her wrist. Her hair was shoulder length, light and wavy, with razored ends, and she wore a large pair of black glasses that managed to make her look hot and smart all at the same time, like she could calculate quadratic equations and forecast an annual budget without ever ruining her lipstick. I picked up my cup and looked away from her, out the window. The last thing I needed was for Miss iPhone to look over and think I was checking her out. Still, my eyes went back. There was just something about the way she charged the counter without looking up from her device that made me watch, half waiting for a collision and half intrigued to see whether or not she could order and get her drink while never raising her eyes from her phone. But when she reached the front of the line, she dropped the phone into her jacket pocket and ordered venti Americano with a splash of cream with a smile in her voice. Holy shit. Her voice. It was her. The blonde was Sophie. I pictured her long dark hair and lacy wedding gown and couldn't quite believe it. As if hearing my thoughts, she glanced around the coffee shop, then leveled me with eye contact. I raised my cup and an eyebrow, which made her frown and turn back to the coffee counter. Okay. But when she finally came over, she gave me a small smile. So high. So high. My eyes ran over her face and hair. Wow, you look, different. She quirked an eyebrow, encouraging me to expand. Shorter, I corrected, which made her smile grow as she sat down in the chair across from me. I've been working hard on my height, she said, pulling the stopper out of the lid and setting it on the table. So this pleases me. Naturally, I muttered, and we shared a quiet smile. I found it hard to believe that this was that bride. The night of her botched wedding, she'd been drunk and silly, hurling fucking Twinkies with mascara-rimmed eyes. I couldn't quite reconcile that hot mess with this measured person in front of me. Blonde Sophie looked like she subscribed to the Wall Street Journal, whereas the bride had looked like she subscribed to Vogue, and maybe People. Why did you want to meet? She tucked one side of her hair behind her ear and said, I have to admit that your text shocked the hell out of me. She was definitely more tense when she was sober, which wasn't a total surprise, and she seemed suspicious of me. Yeah, well, the last time we spoke, the only time, she corrected in a clipped tone, you expressed an interest in becoming an objectress. She had been raising the cup to her lips, and at my words, she froze. She blinked, but that was the only move she made. So, this is me calling on you for help, I said. Public servant. Wheels were turning as her eyes moved all over my face, like she was taking in all the data. What was she thinking? Listen. She rubbed her lips together, and I could tell she was turning me down. I don't think, has your opinion on love changed? I interrupted, trying to poke the tiger. Not only did I want her to do this, but I kind of wanted to see a glimmer of the girl who'd done cartwheels down the hotel hallway. Are you now a hopeless romantic? God, no. That question shook her right out of indecision, and she looked at me like I was a moron for suggesting it. But that doesn't mean I want to insert myself into someone else's drama. Fuck, she was going to say no, and TJ was going to be screwed. I picked up my coffee and said, what if I'd said that about your wedding? She paused, tilted her head, and muttered, that's not fair. True, though. I rubbed a hand over my chin and said, so you owe me. Her eyes narrowed, and I knew I'd made a mistake. This was not a woman to be pressured. She lowered her voice and said, we paid you for your services. Your friend's check bounced. I lied, waiting for her reaction. So it was a gift from me. Freaking Asha, she muttered, rolling her eyes as if this was Asha's standard MO. How much do I owe you? As I said, it was a gift, I repeated, trying not to smile, but fairly certain I was smirking. A gift that spared you from a lifetime of being Mrs. Sophie... What was old Stu's last name? She blinked and took in a deep breath through her nose, and for a second, I thought she wasn't going to tell me. Then she said quietly, Loren. Oh, dear Lord, I said, unable to keep the laugh from escaping. You were going to be Sophie Loren? Like the Italian film star, but with an E instead of an A? Sophie Loren. Thank God I showed up and stopped things before you spent your entire life listening to people ask you if you've ever seen the movie Houseboat. Cary Grant was a dream in that flick, she said, shocking the hell out of me both by knowing the classic film and, for finally sounding a little like the bride I'd rescued. Sophia Loren was the dream, I corrected, then added, at least tell me you would have kept your name if Stewie had managed to put a ring on it. Of course I would keep my name, she said, making a face that told me she was keeping her name no matter whom she married. Which is, I prodded, Steinbeck. She lifted her chin, daring me to make a comment about the famous author. And yes, I wanted to because it was low-hanging fruit, but I wanted her help even more. So, are you scared of objecting? I asked casually, leaning back in my chair and crossing my arms. Is that it? Kind of, she admitted, taking the lid off her cup. She had three twinkling bands on her middle finger, silver, yellow gold, rose gold, that caught the light when she moved her hand. I don't like conflict, and this is conflict to the nth degree. But it also just seems like a terrible idea on so many levels. Let me tell you the situation before you say no. I cleared my throat. Okay? She sighed again and said, Fine, but don't expect to change my mind. Hey, Soph, I asked, lowering my voice and trying to remind her of our hours-long friendship in that hotel room. Her eyes looked a little wider all of a sudden, a little softer as she said, Yeah? Try and remember the way you felt the morning of your wedding while I tell you this, okay? A storm crossed her face as her forehead creased and she swallowed. She said nothing but looked at me expectantly. So, TJ is a kindergarten teacher with a heart of gold. When he was deployed with the National Guard for 6 months, his girlfriend Callie cheated on him, but he forgave her and ultimately proposed a year later. Fool, she said, raising her coffee to her mouth. Agreed, I replied. Fast forward to last weekend. He's at his bachelor party, and one of his groomsmen goes to the washroom and leaves his phone on the table. TJ accidentally sees a text from Callie. Oh my god, she's cheating on him with a groomsman? Sophie said, disgusted. Seriously? Nope. The groomsman is her brother, but the text says to keep TJ out late because she wants to have a goodbye with Ronnie, the guy she cheated with. Not only that, but she says, try and get a pic of TJ with the stripper so I have something to hold over him. Buy him a lap dance. No, Sophie said, her mouth dropping open. That bitch. I could tell I was reaching her. Do it, do it, do it. So TJ says he's sick and bails, getting home in time to log into her iPad and see all of her texts with Ronnie. Nightmarish, explicit content. Gross, she murmured. But in addition to the cheating, they totally mock him in their conversations. Laugh at what a fool he is. Refer to him by a nickname. Nasty stuff. What's the nickname? She asked. And I noticed her mask of measuredness was gone. She looked fully immersed in the drama of the story, kind of adorably wide-eyed. The kindergartner, I replied, and just saying it made my gut hurt. Poor fucking TJ. We'd been friends since junior high, even though we went to different schools, and while I opted to avoid relationships entirely, he'd always thrown himself into one girlfriend after another, desperate to find his happily ever after. Sophie didn't comment, but just gave a nod, and I could tell that part bothered her. She suddenly looked sad, and I didn't like it, but I kept going. I really wanted her to save TJ. TJ is devastated, but what can he do? Callie's three older brothers are scary redneck cops in their small town. Her uncle is the sheriff, and her dad holds the mortgage on TJ's house. She shook her head and said, Is this real? This cannot be real. Right? If I didn't know TJ, I wouldn't believe it myself. If TJ throws her over, his life in that town is destroyed. Damn, she said, slowly shaking her head. But if someone else airs the dirty laundry, it won't be on him. I'd help if I could, but I think a guy inserting himself in the situation is just asking to visit the hospital. Lovely, she said, blinking fast. The good thing for you is that these macho pricks in their redneck town have an antiquated sense of chivalry, so they would never hit a woman. Extraordinary news, she said dryly. He needs your help. She sighed, and for the first time since she'd sat down, I felt like she was actually considering it. She dragged a hand through her hair and nibbled on the corner of her bottom lip. Did I mention TJ fosters rescue animals? Stop. She said, pointing at me with a red-tipped index finger. You can't manipulate me with one is a cat that has wheels for back feet, I interrupted. And when he runs, they squeak like, "Shut up," she demanded, but exhaled a tiny laugh as she shook her head again. "The other one is blind." "It is not," she cried, looking defeated. With bald spots from his feline anxiety, which I totally think they should call Fangxiety because it makes him sound like a badass vampire cat. "Fine," Sophie interrupted, gritting her teeth and holding up a hand. "I'll consider it, but you have to go with me if I do it." "What?" I hadn't expected that. "Yes," she said, lifting her chin and narrowing her eyes as her brain went to work. "I'm too chicken, and I have no idea what I'm doing. If I go, you go." "What? What the hell will I do while you object?" She shrugged. "Appear to be my date, I guess." I hadn't considered going with her, but I also couldn't come up with a reason why that wasn't a good idea. Most people brought dates to weddings, so it checked out, and TJ really needed her help. "That's not a terrible idea, actually." "Gee, thanks," she quipped. "When and where is this wedding, by the way? I can't do anything local because of my job." "Totally understand. Yours was the only local wedding I've ever done." I hoped reminding her of my service would help. "And it's at a country chapel out by Murdoch." I cleared my throat and scratched my eyebrow. "The wedding's tomorrow." "Of course it's tomorrow," she muttered, shaking her head but not freaking out like I'd expected. "So, 30-ish minutes away?" Sophie pulled out her phone and went straight for the calendar. "What time? Do we need to go early? Do you have a standard speech you can forward so I can practice?" Whoa, the switch had been flipped, and Sophie was all business. "We don't have to go early, and I can pick you up if that's easiest, but I'll get the details, including dress code, and text them to you later this morning, along with a general idea of my SOP. She looked up from the phone. "Dress code? Is it different from normal wedding attire?" I didn't want to lose her on this detail, so I was very casual when I said, "It might have said something about casual dress, so I'll confirm and let you know." It actually said, "Jeans and boots only, no dress clothes will be allowed," because Callie surrounded herself with rednecks, but I'd wait until Sophie confirmed before I tossed out that gem. "Okay," she replied, still looking concerned as she shut down her phone and returned it to her pocket. "I should probably get to work now." "Same." We stood and headed for the door, and as I held it open for her, she asked, "You don't think I'll get punched, do you?" "Nah," I said, stepping out into the crisp spring morning. "What usually happens is that the bride and groom start fighting about the accusations, and no one notices me as I exit." "Except at my wedding," she said, glancing at me out of the corner of her eye. "I seem to recall a punch." For the record, it was like a closed fist slap. I reached into my jacket and grabbed my sunglasses, putting them on as I said, "I barely even felt it." "Someone sounds defensive." "I'm not defensive, but it wasn't a punch." "Says the punchee," she murmured, pulling her keys out of her blazer pocket. "Punchee isn't even a word," I corrected. "And no one is going to come after a girl who's barely 5 feet tall and speaking the truth." "I'm 5'4", for the record," she said, and then gestured to the left. "My car is down by the park, so I have to go that way. It was nice seeing you again, and I look forward to your further instructions as I quake in fear and question my decisions." "My truck is also down by the park," I said, "so we can discuss your decisions for a few more moments." "Such a lucky day," she said, her mouth in a smart-ass smirk, and started walking. The luckiest. I caught a whiff of her perfume, something light and fruity, and I was curious to see what kind of car she drove. My bet was a very practical Honda CRV, or perhaps an Audi sedan. "So tell me about your life, post-shitshow wedding. Are you seeing anyone?" She looked over at me like I'd sprouted a second head. "Seriously? That's your question, Mom?" "I'm not asking for any reason other than I found your take on relationships to be interesting," I said, unsure why I had even asked the question. "Settle your ass down." She made a noise in her throat and slid her hands into her pockets. I am not seeing anyone, and that makes me ridiculously happy. Since the wedding, I've purchased a new car, adopted 2 cats, totally redecorated my apartment, and there is no man in my life telling me why he doesn't like my choices. I wholly believed that she drank her own Kool-Aid regarding love, but it also sounded like she was trying a little too hard to sound happy. Names, please. What? I'm going to need your cats' names. It's my job as a man to let you know my opinion on your decision. That is your job, isn't it? The wind blew her hair across her face. She really looked good with that haircut. And she said, their names are Karen and Joanne. I said, surprised by her boring choices. Huh. Huh? That's your response? She turned a little, grinning, and walked sideways so she could look at me when she said, come at me, Max. Let me have that manly opinion. Well, I started, clueless as to why anyone would choose such ordinary names. Did you name them posthumously after people? She shook her head. Nope. Was it a random choice, like you were selecting the first 2 names when you searched mom haircuts? Nope again, she replied in a sing-song voice. Well, whatever the reason is, I think you selected the most vanilla, boring cat names I've ever heard. Exactly, she said, sounding victorious. And was there a reason for this? There was, in fact. I named them to irritate my mother. Oh, please share this story. Her entire face lit up as she grinned and said, my mom's best friends are named Karen and Joanne, and they are gossipy, judgmental harpies. And even though she knows I don't like them, she will call me and go on and on about whatever drama those two are embroiled in at book club or golf league. Karen and Joanne ordered deviled eggs and were beside themselves when the caterer brought a cheese tray instead. Inane crap like that, right? I laughed as I realized where this was going. Right. So now, every time she has a Karen Joanne story, I share my own Karen Joanne story. Things like, Karen coughed up a hairball in the kitchen this morning and Joanne tried eating it. You, I said around my laugh, are a horrible child. But it gets me off the phone with her. Her face was soft and amused as she pointed to a car that was parallel parked next to a street meter. This is me. I looked at the shiny black car, then back at her. No fucking way. You're kidding, right? Nope. She pulled out her keys and put them in the driver's side door lock. You gonna share your man opinion on this too? I wasn't really a car guy, aside from knowing which cars I liked, which cars hauled ass, and which cars were asinine. But her car, holy shit. You drive a 69 Camaro? She beamed, almost like she was proud of me for recognizing it. I do. His name is Nick, he's a Sagittarius, and he makes me feel things I've never felt for another man. I couldn't wrap my head around it. Is this your weekend car? She blinked. It's my only car. What do you drive on snowy days? I asked. Nick? No way. How many miles does he have? 8,000. She said, pulling open the door. 108,000? I asked. No. She rubbed her lips together. 8,000. Are you telling me? I said, confident I was missing something while suspecting I wasn't, that you have a 69 Camaro with only 8,000 miles on it and you drive it every day as your primary source of transportation. She raised an eyebrow. Do I hear judgment in your voice? Jealousy, maybe, but not judgment. I shook my head. You have to know how much you can get for it if it stays in this shape, though, right? She tilted her head. You think I'm an idiot for not babying it because it's worth a small fortune? Yep. Idiot's a strong word. What if I tell you that Nick wants to live a full life? She asked, and I could tell she was only half joking. He doesn't want to sit in a temperature-controlled garage all day underneath a protective cover. He was born to be reckless and go fast and probably get in a fender bender or two. Why did she make sense when she was talking about her car like it was a person? I bought it from a sweet lady whose husband had been obsessed with it. He bought it new in 69, he died in 72, and then it sat in her garage until a few months ago when she sold it to me. She said she regretted never taking it out, and she made me promise to drive it into the ground. She said she wanted me to put 100,000 miles on it and let some snow pile up on the hood every now and then, and I intend to keep my promise. How could I not smile at that? I realized as I looked down at her that I had no idea who she was. Wild bride, serious professional, hopeless car romantic? Which one was the real her? You're very weird, Sophie. I know, she said, lifting her chin just a little, daring me to pass judgment. I like it, I added, meaning that. There was something about her that, shit, that I liked. Her eyes moved over my face for a minute, like she was taking in all the details in order to form her own opinion, and then she just said, now my life is complete. Text me all the details about tomorrow, okay? I flipped her off before turning in the direction of my car, and I heard the familiar sound of her laugh as I walked away.
Chapter 7 Sophie. I stepped off the elevator and headed for my desk, in a good mood after coffee with Max. He'd been funny and not creepy at all, and I'd felt surprisingly comfortable around him, which was weird because I didn't usually enjoy socializing with strangers. I don't know why, but I'd been shocked by how attractive he was. I'd looked him up online after he texted last night and found him on LinkedIn, but there hadn't been any photos, so yes, I'd remembered him as handsome, but it was in a suited-up GQ kind of way. That morning, though, he'd looked like a different man. Same dark eyes and strong nose, but a totally different aesthetic. Jeans, work boots, black pullover with some sort of logo next to the three-quarter zip, and a Patagonia fleece jacket. He just needed a hard hat and he'd look like the host of an HGTV home flipping show. Which made sense because according to his profile, he was a senior project manager for a construction company. The biggest construction company in the state. Somehow his realness at the coffee shop, both in appearance and personality, put me at ease. Perhaps tomorrow's wedding wouldn't be so bad. Ugh, I was already nervous, though. Could I do it? Could I actually stand up in front of everyone at a wedding and object to a couple's union? I was used to giving presentations to large groups at work, but a church full of strangers expecting romance was something else entirely.
Good morning, Sophie, I heard from the office to my left.
Good morning, Ben, I replied on autopilot, not even looking in that direction. Our president was big into promoting the idea that at Nesbo, Inc., we were more like a family than a corporation. He'd implemented the daily good mornings, which was basically a decree that if you saw someone walking in to start their day, you took the 2 seconds to say good morning. It sounded innocuous enough, but since my cubicle was all the way at the other end of the building, one of those super collaborative open floor plan configurations, I was subjected to a daily lineup of seemingly endless good mornings before I'd even had my first energy drink, and I loathed it. My teeth should be ground to bits from the amount of gnashing that occurred each and every day.
Morning, Sophie,
from my right, to which I responded. Morning, Dallas.
Morning, Soph,
from the cubicle in the corner. Morning, Betsy, I murmured, opening my purse to look inside for my AirPods. God, I hoped I hadn't forgotten them, because the office was so quiet that the sounds of typing drove me insane. Headphones were my only salvation from the brink of madness.
Good morning, Sophie,
Isabel said. Good morning, Iz, I replied, rummaging through my tote.
Good morning, Sophie, Stewart said.
Good morning, pathetic tosspot, I muttered now in a full-on panic that I'd left them at home.
Good morning, Sophie,
I heard from the corner office. Good morning, Amy, I replied, giving up on the hunt. I'd clearly left my AirPods at home and would now be subjected to the overbearing sounds of silence. Wonderful. I could see that Edie was already in her office and on the phone when I reached my cubicle and set down my bag, so I gave her a hand raise, to which she responded with a subsequent chin nod. No matter how early I came in, she always beat me, which was fine because she was my boss,
That was the way it was supposed to work, right? As long as I beat my team in, all was right in the world, and I always beat them. I sat down and opened my laptop, drinking more of my Americano as my computer came to life. I knew it was going to be one of those wall-to-wall meeting days, so I needed to fill myself with preventative caffeine. The Nesbo database bleeped, and up popped the start message. Good morning, Sophie Steinbeck, HR Director. And the smiling robot prompt to enter my password. As I typed in my very secure 8-digit passphrase with both symbols and numbers, I daydreamed, like I did every morning, about the prompt saying, Good morning, Sophie Steinbeck, VP of HR. I knew I was younger than the VPs of the other business units, but I was so ready. I was pretty sure the other VPs